This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We will visit with Matt Williams, WAFB morning show host for many years and also a Crime Stoppers reporter, the Crime Stoppers reporter. We've had a flurry of house fires, unfortunately, and several deaths in our area over the last few days. That's the big story in Baton Rouge today, and we'll talk with him about that and also reflect on what was the most deadly year as far as murders in East Baton Rouge Parish ever. Also on the show, Penny Nance from Concerned Women for America on a year in which sexual harassment in the workplace was a dominant issue, and the legacy of Anita Hill, who brought charges against Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas in 1991. And Dan Borne, the voice of the Pete Maravich Assembly Center on today's 30-year anniversary of the death of Pistol Pete, college basketball's leading scorer. We're back. Stay tuned. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. Our guest to begin is Matt Williams, the popular morning show host on WAFB in Baton Rouge and also the Crime Stoppers reporter. And Matt's been at the station with the highest ratings in Louisiana and one of the highest rated stations in America for the last 15 years, 12 years as morning show host. Seems like yesterday, Matt.
It is just yesterday. I have no idea what you're talking about all these years. And obviously talking to my mother again about the popular host of the morning show. But yeah, I'm not sure where the time went. You and I were just talking about that. I'm going to have to double check the calendar because 15 years does not sound – that's crazy.
And a dozen years getting up literally and before the crack of dawn.
Yeah, exactly.
You're up like at midnight, right?
Well, no, actually, I'm sleeping in these days. My alarm goes off a little right around 1:30. And, you know, it's I'll get to the station now about 2:10, 2:15. Thing is, as I mess with your mic here, you'd think, Jim, being in the business that I'm in, I would know not to mess with microphones.
You're okay.
I get to the station, and there's already two people there. And have been.
At 2:10?
Yeah, and have been since midnight or before. It's 3.5 hours of live television every single morning, so there's a lot of writing, a lot of editing to do, and so they're already working it. So.
And quite often I see you at the station like late afternoon.
Every once in a while, you know, my schedule, certainly, you know, my partner in the morning, Lauren Westbrook, who does, you know, anchor the noon news, you know, she works longer into the day than I do. And so there's a lot of, we work weird hours. And you got to be a little weird to do this business that we do, Jim. You know that very well. We're all a little bit nuts. But if you're looking for 9 to 5, that ain't this job.
Right, and I see you've got two cell phones.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Sorry about that. That is so stupid. I know, right? I mean, digital leashes are everywhere, and they are multiplying. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I suspect you use one for one thing and the other for another, but that may be something we'll talk about.
Yeah, you never know. We'll get into
but
all
anyway,
that later.
Matt Williams for 12 years has been the face we wake up to if we watch television.
God, that's sad.
He's there early in the morning and gets there at 2:10 on a regular day. And unfortunately, over the last few days, we've had these terrible stories in Baton Rouge regarding house fires and people dying.
This, Jim, is – we were talking with a number of people this morning. We had State Fire Marshal Butch Browning on the show as well. And I asked him – he's been fighting fires in the firefighting business for 30-plus years. I asked Butch, you know, have you ever seen anything like this to start a year in your storied tenure? The answer was no. And so that tells you what we're dealing with. Obviously, as a state fire marshal, they respond to scenes all over the state. But he was talking about, you know, specifically Baton Rouge. No, never seen anything like this. And in talking with Kurt Monty, Baton Rouge Fire Department this morning, obviously they're the ones in direct control of that scene on Iroquois this morning. Kurt Monty confirming 4 deaths and 2 in the hospital in critical. And when they say critical, their job with them right now was simply getting them to breathe on their own. That tells you the nature of those injuries, those two critical in the hospital.
And today's headline at in the Advocate front page above the fold is mother, two children die in Zachary. Fires have killed 6 in the East Baton Rouge this year, and now this incident today adds to that total. We're up to what, 10?
It is heartbreaking to think about. We're dealing with numbers like that. It is the 5th of January. You talk about some of those other fires, the one on Governor Street, the one on 78th Street. And we don't know yet, Jim, the cause of this fire. Investigators can make assumptions. So can we. Mm-hmm. The other fires have been linked to heating devices, that kind of thing, space heaters. We have that conversation all the time. And I know we say it a million times, be careful, be careful, be careful with all this. Working smoke detectors, working smoke. It sounds like we're, you know, it's that broken record. But it can literally be life and death. So we never think we're saying it too much. Mm-hmm.
And we don't handle cold weather in this part of the world very well.
We don't know what to do with it, Jim. No. We just don't. We're not used to it. And so when you talk about starts in the 20s for half a dozen days in a row, that's happened 9 times since the 30s, you know, that kind of thing. So this is not something we're used to. And so when it gets even colder at night, you know, we're going to do what we have to do to try and keep warm, and that has led to some deadly results.
877-217-5757 is your number, locally 297-5633. And if you'd like to send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. Ali Baltazar is producing, and our leadoff guest is Matt Williams. And a deadly start to the year, and in a way that we probably didn't anticipate. Fires killing at least 10 people, and you say 2 others in very critical condition.
Yes, it's not. This is, you know, when we began this morning, Jim, you know, our lead story was the stabbing that involved 2 children, a woman and a man as well. Sheriff's office telling us that man that also was stabbed, they say he's responsible for those other stabbings. How could that not be the lead? 2 children, a woman stabbed. How could that not be the lead? Well, as I am walking out for the 4:30 show, everything changes, and it begins to spin when we hear house fire, possible entrapment, kids involved, and the lead story changes. Obviously, the stabbing is still a big event that is unfolding, but when you talk about people dying in house fires and what we have seen over the last week, obviously that is the headline maker.
Well, and that story, literally a picture telling a million words.
Oh, my gosh, that trailer in Sacramento.
Trailer, it just is completely devastated by fire.
And yeah.
And a woman and 2 young children,
yes.
The mother and her 8-year-old daughter and a 10-month-old. So we need to make sure that we're taking better precaution.
There are ways. You know, sometimes as these investigations unfold, they find out there's no working smoke detector, a battery simply not put in place, or maybe the smoke detector was not working properly. We were, again, like we mentioned, talking with Butch Browning this morning. State Fire Marshal's Office has a program in place where you can get access to those smoke detectors. Now, again, that is a state agency. All across mm-hmm. the state, they have this program in place. Many local fire departments, including BRFD, have the same kind of programs. If you don't have a working smoke detector, that needs to change immediately. We've seen reasons why all this week, and it can change immediately. Get in touch with them. In a lot of cases, it's not just giving you a smoke detector. They can come out and install it as well. There's no reason for folks not to have a working smoke detector. They save lives.
And Matt, unfortunately, we had a tragic year of 2017.
Oh my gosh,
with
the deaths,
104 homicides in East Baton Rouge Parish, up from
61.
61. We had Hiller Moore here yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's inexplicable that we would rise 40% in a year, but we did.
When you talk, and I know that you had the conversation with the DA, and he attributes it to, obviously, he says, a rise in drug activity, an increase in domestic violence. Here's the thing, though. If you hear that and then sit back and say, oh, well, okay, that's what it is, doesn't involve me, that sickens me. Nobody in this town lives in a vacuum. At least they shouldn't. What happens down the road, if it's out of sight of your house, it should still matter. This is my town. This is my city. And 104 people murdered, far too much. Far too many lives lost. We talk about one being too many. We're at 104 in the parish. So what mm-hmm. needs to change? That's a conversation that continues. And after the year that we had in 2017, it's a conversation that needs to change as well.
Yeah, it's going to put us in the top 10 in America as far as murder
yeah.
rate. We're already number 1 in the HIV rate.
Exactly.
But to put it in perspective, and crunching the numbers yesterday, I came up with 23.5 per 100,000.
Good gracious.
That doesn't sound like a lot, but think about 100,000 people congregating at Tiger
Stadium
and thinking of 23 of them being dead by the end of the
year. Not walking out of there alive. Yeah. Exactly. Put that number into perspective. That's a great way to put it. Everybody can kind of figure out what 100,000 people looks like just by thinking about a full Tiger Stadium. And yeah, now you get to think about it, 23 people not making it out of there alive. Mm-hmm. What, yeah.
But of the victims, 86 were African American. 10 were minorities of others. Mm-hmm. And then most of them were in these danger zones that a lot of people in Baton Rouge never go. So there is this tendency to say that's somebody else's problem.
Exactly right, which is exactly what we were talking about a second ago. The fact that many people still believe it is not impacting me. This is not something that I need to worry about. This is a they problem. I hate that. That solves nothing. If we don't have the bulk of the people engaged and involved in a conversation, then what are we doing? I mean, do we really want to split up as a city? Trust me, that whole thing's going to be coming back around again. Do we really want to divide and see if we can conquer? No. This is a conversation that everybody needs to be having. Everybody needs to be at the table. Everybody needs to want to be engaged to make their city that much better. Stop if you are living in that vacuum.
And when one of these murders happens in our backyard, as it literally did a few years ago in the backyard of the television station, it gets a lot more attention than if it happens in North Baton Rouge.
It does. Our goal is to make sure that once it gets to the airwaves, that it does not. Our goal, obviously, is to cover each and every one of these murders, regardless of where it happens, with the same amount of attention. Now, depending on where it happens, social media has the possibility of taking over and guiding that conversation and gearing more attention, depending on where those murders took place. But that's not our intention, that's for sure.
Matt Williams is with us for another segment. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. Send us an email at talk@talklouisiana.org, and we're back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757, your number. Matt Williams, the intrepid Crime Stoppers reporter, and there's unfortunately a lot of crime to report in Baton Rouge, and also the morning show host with Lauren Westbrook. He's been at the desk at WAFB in the morning since 2006.
Good gracious, Jim. What are you doing dating there?
Yeah, 12 years.
And
well,
if
12 very good years.
Well, yeah. And Lauren and I are doing what we can. As anybody will tell you, it's truly 9 News this morning with Johnny Ashen and Diane Deaton. And, Lauren and I are just there to, whatever. We're like the backup dancers for Johnny and Diane.
Well, before we get to some other local items, today the author of a scathing new book about the president says,
wow.
President Trump's attempt to block its publication would not only help with sales, but also confirms the book's key finding that he says that our president is unfit. Now, this guy, Michael Wolff, the book is Fire and Fury. And today, there was a line outside a bookstore at midnight in the nation's capital, I hear, for people wanting to buy a copy of Fire and Fury, and Wolf says he's going to send the president a box of chocolates for promoting promoting his book. But in this world we live in, which people are tethered to their phones and not reading very much, they don't read newspapers unless they see it online for the most part. It is nice to see somebody, I don't care what the book is, standing in line to get a book.
The way we consume our news these days, you're right, Jim. It is 140 characters. Well, actually, that's now Twitter has upped it now. Oh, God forbid, 280 characters. Yeah, that's exactly where it is. And then it stops for most people. Oh, well, that must be it. I don't need to go in depth and figure out the reality of the situation. Again, I don't want to get into the politics here because social media is a cesspool of that nonsense. But yeah, once you see a tweet, maybe don't just stop there. It's not all fake news out there. There's some actual reporting going on by legitimate journalists who have given their lives and careers, for this. Do some digging yourself. Do some digging yourself. When you see that tweet or you see that post, keep going. Don't just look at the splashy headline.
Mm-hmm. Well, We've had an interesting year with the President of the United States, and we're not even 1 year into Donald Trump being the leader of the free world. He keeps things turning, doesn't he?
He does. He absolutely keeps things turning. And right now, you know, it was, what was it? Is it CDC coming out right now with what to do in case of a nuclear explosion? They're coming out with guidelines. Okay, well, how close are we on that, the doomsday clock now, if CDC is doing that? Are we going back to Bay of Pigs and JFK kind of time? So, yeah, there is, you talk about the world spinning, and obviously there's a lot of focus on North Korea, and so what is the outcome here? We're all pins and needles, seems like, every day.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, you started as a sports reporter, though, and you still follow sports, as anyone who's into news in Louisiana has to do.
Yeah.
Big weekend for the Saints.
Kind of, a little bit. Back into the playoffs for the first time in a few years. And playing a team that they know, obviously, quite well. Already beating the Panthers
twice
this season. How do you beat them a third time? And, you know, if you start flipping coins, the odds say at some point. But those two wins have nothing to do with what's going to happen on Sunday. Number one priority for the Saints, dealing with number one in blue. That's Cam Newton. Now, the second priority is probably going to be, obviously, keeping number nine in black and gold clean and his playmakers open as well. And that's going to deal with trying to contain Luke Kuechly. That man in the linebacker position leads the teams in tackle. Leads the Panthers in fumble recoveries, leads the team in interceptions. So dealing with Kuechly is going to be priority 1B for the Saints on Sunday. You do that, and guess what? We get to move on to the playoffs. It's going to be fun, though. 3:30.
All right. 877-217-5757. Still time to get in with Matt Williams. In just a bit, we'll hear from Penny Nance of Concerned Women for America. But if you'd like to send us an email, and I have a few of them that we'll get to, for Matt, it's talk@talklouisiana.org. LSU, of course, is now apparently in the hunt for an offensive coordinator and is paying its defensive coordinator $2.5 million.
Hey, look, here's the, and you know what? Here's the thing. A lot of people are going to say, my gosh, what is going on with all this? I say kind of bravo. LSU football is one of the only, LSU athletics, one of the only athletic departments in the country that does not take money from the academia side. They make money. Actually, they write a check back to academia. So if they want to pay this amount of money to keep this guy and not have Texas A&M come in and raid them again and get another coach that LSU is going to have to face every single year, not just in their conference, but their division, I say bravo. Obviously, they're going to have to be paying for this somehow. We'll see what ticket prices do. But at the same time that they keep their defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator looks to be on the outs. That's going to be a money conversation as well, some kind of settlement deal. We're going to see what happens with Matt Canada. That should be happening pretty soon.
All right. Here's some questions for Matt Williams. Nicholas on Nicholson says, what would Mr. Williams propose to reduce crime in Baton Rouge? Too many people talk about it, but don't seem to do anything concrete.
Exactly right, and I wish I had that solution. If I did, I think maybe I'd run for something substantial. But the whole idea of what is – every time I talk with somebody in the business of the know, in the business of protecting us from crime, they always ask me, are you gonna ask me what I would do to solve the crime problem? No. It is such an open-ended question that nobody has the answer for right now. Because if we did have the answer, we'd be doing it. The thing is, it is so layered, the things that have to happen to quell this issue. It is so layered. You talk about dealing with poverty, dealing with education, dealing with what goes on inside the home, dealing with workplace violence, dealing with – there are so many different layers that go into this. That's what I'm talking about having everybody at the table and wanting to be involved. You can't solve this problem when half the population doesn't care about getting involved.
Nancy Jo Craig writes, Baton Rouge had 104 murders in 2017. New York City had 209 murders. We're talking about a city 20 times the size of Baton Rouge. Something is very wrong here, Nancy Jo writes, and they are doing something right up there. So Hiller Moore talked about that yesterday. It's a different culture, but they have embraced the crime epidemic that was in place there in 1990 when they had about 3,000 murders, and now they're down to under 300.
I moved to New York City in 1986, and I remember that was a part, that was Ed Kochmayer back in the day, that kind of thing. And crime was crazy, insane. Even the little things, subway cars, I mean, littered with graffiti. And then the crackdown. Literally, the crackdown happened. And over the next decade or so, they began to solve their problem. People got involved. And you saw a great reduction. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about that number in New York City, that 200 number in New York City, and it's a city 20 times the size, that's because they have bought into a lot of what they needed to do. And people from all walks of life have got involved. So, when we talk about 104 in EBR in 1 year, mm-hmm. something's got to change.
Okay, and we'll finish with a lighter note. This one from Sean downtown asking, do you prefer to stand up as you're doing now to deliver the news or sit at a desk?
Sean, the decision was not left to us. We had a new set built, and the designers are like, yeah, everybody's standing. By everybody, what do you mean? Who you mean every? And then we added on another hour, and they're like, oh, wait, you got 3.5 hours? Look, I can stand up.
You can roll.
It's okay. But yeah, no, there's a lot of stations across the country just doing away. Apparently, chairs cost too much money. If you look at our studio, we literally, I'm not kidding, in the studio alone, there's about 60 TV monitors. It is like a sports bar on steroids in there.
Yeah.
So apparently so many monitors were purchased, we ran out of money, couldn't buy chairs. So no chairs for anybody, and that includes the 3.5 hour morning show every morning. So yeah, we just – the trick is don't lock your knees. Just don't lock up your knees or you're going to end up on the floor. So there you go.
Well, I like the standing up, but you tower over practically everybody
well,
you interview.
Actually, Lauren and Johnny and Diane, there's some boxes that help them get up. But I got to stand in a hole. I blame my parents for my 6'3 height, obviously. But you know what? I'm able to get things off the top shelf for most of my life, so I'm not complaining.
Well, just don't make a mistake and stand on the box.
It gets a little gigantic out there. I'm like a Jolly Green Giant with gray hair.
Well, keep up the good work.
All
Always
right,
good to catch up with Matt
you
Williams.
Too.
Let's do it again soon. Unfortunately, a tragic day in our community, and we send our thoughts and prayers to those who were affected by the house fire that has taken 4 lives this morning. And we're back after this pause for the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. You can email us talk@talklouisiana.org. And we're joined now by Penny Nance. She is the president of the group Concerned Women for America. And recently she wrote a widely read op-ed piece in USA Today about sexual harassment and about the legacy of Anita Hill. And for those of us old enough to remember the fall of 1991 in October, it was a riveting U.S. Senate hearing involving Clarence Thomas when he was nominated by the first President Bush to be a member of the Supreme Court at age 43. And Anita Hill, on October 11th, came forward with some explosive allegations. And here is a sampling of what happened 26 years and a few months ago.
He talked about pornographic materials. On several occasions, Thomas told me graphically of his own sexual prowess.
Senator, I would like to start by saying unequivocally, uncategorically, that I deny each and every single allegation against me today. As far as I'm concerned, it is a high-tech lynching.
That was 26 years ago in a few months. Clarence Thomas, of course, prevailed. He became a Supreme Court member, and he's still there almost 27 years later. And he will be turning 70 soon, but he has a chance to be the longest-serving Supreme Court justice ever. The vote, by the way, in the U.S. Senate was 52-48. 52-48. Most of the Democrats voted against Clarence Thomas, but two of the key votes for him were from Democrats from Louisiana, John Berlinger Breaux and J. Bennett Johnston. They both voted to confirm Clarence Thomas. Penny Nance is with us, Concerned Women for America, and good morning to you, Penny.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
What are your thoughts about the legacy of Anita Hill and this climate we're facing today?
You know, I'm glad you set that up, and I was, like everybody else, I was a brand new college graduate watching those hearings on television. And, you know, the bottom line is there was a process there in which Anita Hill was able to share her views or her story. And at the end of the day, there was a lot of support from Clarence Thomas from women. Women, this is before my time at Concerned Women for America, but our members came and lined the halls of the Senate building before he went into his hearing and thanked him. And people decided that there was not enough to this story because, remember, she was not just some, you know, woman. She was an attorney with a very bright future who had followed him from job to job to job, had arranged for him to come and speak to her class and for her to pick him up at the airport when he was when she was a professor at ORU. There was a lot of questions there. And so there was a process. At the end of the day, the U.S. Senate, speaking on behalf of the American people, decided that he was credible, and they gave him the job, and there's never been a whisper about him since. But set that aside.
All right, well, hold that thought for a moment. You gave me a lot to work with there. The vote was 52 to 48, so it was a very close vote. And there are those who believe that Anita Hill was credible, but that the climate was different then. They brushed that aside and voted for a very conservative a young man who would be on the court for a long time, and that is what has happened. But there are many who believe that Anita Hill was extremely credible, Penny.
Of course there are. But the bottom line was, at that time, in that day, not everyone agreed. Women of different races, socioeconomic levels came together and supported Thomas. But what I was going to say is, at the end of the day, really, only two people know. And let me back up and say one thing about that. Yes, it was a different day, but I don't think women, particularly members of Concerned Women for America, ever thought it was okay to sexually harass or prey on women. That has never been okay by us. And so, at the end of the day, he was chosen. But the problem with all of this was the bigger point of this article was not to go back and unearth what happened 30 years ago. It was to talk about the fact that after this time, Anita Hill, even liberals should be concerned about the politicization of the issue with her choice to lead this commission by Hollywood, because she was interviewed by Tim Russert, and the video is still up on USA Today, in which she said that she supported Bill Clinton through all of that. She said that all of them do it. And because of his position on social
issues. No, she didn't say all of them do it. She did not say that. She did not say
that. She said other presidents have done it. She specifically mentioned JFK, LBJ, and others.
It's different than saying all. And we're talking about sexual harassment as opposed to consensual relationships. Now, Bill Clinton was accused of sexual harassment by some women, and some believe they are credible. Juanita Broderick, Paula Jones, for example, Kathleen Willey. But this president has also been accused of sexual harassment by even more women. So Kirsten Gillibrand, the Democratic U.S. Senator from New York, says Bill Clinton wouldn't survive in today's climate. Why is President Trump surviving with almost 20 women saying that he sexually harassed and in some cases placed his hands upon them?
Well, let's go back. First off, the question is, why is Kirsten Gillibrand coming forward and changing her tune after 20 years? We realize that the Clinton era is over. And they're no longer useful, so now they have turned on them. But those same women, the women in the U.S. Senate, had the opportunity to impeach Bill Clinton on his range of behaviors, and they chose not to do it. So now they've all changed the tune, and I understand that. It is a different day. We have to take this seriously. I personally have lived through much of this. I am a victim of an attempted rape on a running trail in Virginia. I've written about this extensively in my book. CWA has advocated for the U.S. to take this issue more seriously and to get rid of the backlog of DNA rape kits, which keeps there from being law enforcement, keeps victims from getting justice. We have called on Congress to come clean with the the sexual allegations and the cover-up, whatever the amount is, $17 million in the fund. We don't know how much has been spent on settling sexual harassment allegations. We want to know all of that. There has to be a process. And what I would say about the president is all of these women should come forward. We have an opportunity every 4 years to have a mini revolution, and all of it should be out there and let the American people choose. But we can't choose if we don't know all of the information, and that's why.
All right, but we have the president in his own words on that Access Hollywood tape saying that he sexually pursues women that would be inappropriate, placing his hands, grabbing them by their private parts. With that as the backdrop, and with Al Franken resigning, with the people of Alabama repudiating Roy Moore, why doesn't President Trump why isn't he being held to the same standard?
Well, I think that all of this will come up in the next re-election. You know, it did come up before.
These other people, like Franken, are resigning before the next election.
Franken resigned because there were photographs.
Well, there's audio evidence of the president. Now, he says the president of the United States talking about these things.
And where is this victim? The victim has not, the person that he's talking about never came forth and said that he accused him of hurting her. But
there have been other women who have come forward, Penny.
Well, you're using that piece of evidence to say that the president was guilty of that. You can't generalize. If we're going to talk about it, let's talk about it. Each separate incident deserves to be heard, and every person, including you, sir. If a woman comes forward and says that you did something wrong, we have to corroborate, and we have to discuss, and we have to investigate, and it should be every single time. Because as much as I would like to believe that women are always morally superior to men, unfortunately, the innocence is gone when we talk about the Duke Lacrosse case, when we talk about UVA, when we talk about Lena Dunham's book. Everyone, man or woman, deserves due process, and every bit of it should be investigated.
Penny Nance, Concerned Women for America, with us for a few more minutes, 877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on with Penny Nance.
Good morning. Jeffrey Toobin, a legal analyst for CNN, wrote in the book that the amount of pornography evidently Justice Thomas enjoys perusing has been grossly underestimated. And, you know, I rode in a cab in Atlanta a few years ago.
Now, how do we know that Jeffrey Toobin has the right information?
Well, I'm just telling what he wrote in his book. You can judge it or you can dismiss it if you wish. You know, I rode in a cab several years ago in Atlanta, and I'm getting to a point. The cab driver told me he worked in Washington. He had a friend that worked in an adult bookstore.
All right, well, this is hearsay. I'd rather not
go
there.
Okay, so I'll go into something else. But if it is true regarding his enjoyment of pornography, and look, I've read Playboy myself and didn't look at the articles, but what about the Lawrence versus Texas decision? If he's that much into sex and pornography, I wonder how many times Justice Thomas committed sodomy.
All right, well, Justice Thomas.
I've never heard that about him. I've lived in Washington for the last 20 years.
All right, Dan downtown.
I can tell you that there's been articles written about John Conyers, who recently has resigned, and pictures posted of him enjoying pornography on airplanes. So, there, you know, if there's an issue, usually pornography is connected to it, and it usually comes out publicly in one way or another, but I can never heard what he just said.
David in Atlanta, thank you. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Penny Nance.
Yeah, Ms. Nance. Does Clarence Thomas's confirmation indicate that the Republican senators and a couple of conservative Democrats cared not about whether a sexual predator would sit on the Supreme Court, but making sure that the replacement for Thurgood Marshall would be a right-winger?
All right, we need to take a short break, and we will return with Penny Nance. And was it politics, as it often is on both sides of the spectrum, was it politics that ultimately got Clarence Thomas confirmed? 877-217-5757. Also, Dan Bornay. Stay tuned. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. In just a bit, we're going to hear from Dan Bornay on the 30th anniversary of the death of Pete Maravich. But we're continuing for a few minutes with Penny Nance, President and CEO of Concerned Women for America. It's a conservative organization with many thousands of members. She's 500,000 members across the country. And she, Penny, wrote an op-ed piece in USA Today a few days ago about the legacy of Anita Hill and Anita Hill being involved in the current discussion regarding sexual harassment. And as we went to the break, we heard from Dan downtown. And Dan was noting that politics often determine whether we're for or against somebody when they're accused of wrongdoing. And in the case of Clarence Thomas, I noted that most of the Republicans, in fact, almost all of them voted for his confirmation in 1991, and almost all the Democrats voted against him, with the notable exceptions of John Breaux and Bennett Johnston, who voted to confirm Clarence Thomas on a 52-48 vote in the United States Senate. To give you an example, not every Southern Democratic senator voted to confirm Thomas. Al Gore of Tennessee voted against him. Penny, do we often put our politics ahead of perhaps the information that is presented? Are we influenced mightily by what we believe as far as our political beliefs when it comes to these kinds of judgments?
I think it's human nature to want to give your person a pass, right? And it's also human nature to want to believe the worst about the other guy. But what's really, I think, insidious is what a law professor recently called transactional ethics. And back to the op-ed the reason we're doing this interview in USA Today, I talked about, at the time with Bill Clinton, all the transactional ethics that happened, including with Anita Hill, all of the women who came forward and said it really doesn't matter because he's our guy. I don't want us to be guilty of that. I think character still counts. But I also think that we have to understand that politics is insidious. It can be gutter fighting, street fighting, but we have to be wise about it, and we need to listen and investigate and think it through and give everybody a chance to talk.
Well, we thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. Penny Nance, President of Concerned Women for America. Thank you. And let's talk about 30 years ago today, in 1988, January 5th. Pete Maravich, the leading scorer in major college basketball history, he averaged 44.2 points per game in 83 remarkable games at LSU. He died at the age of 40, heart attack in Pasadena, California. He was playing a pickup basketball game. And the last words he said were to James Dobson of Focus on the Family, that I feel great. And then he died. Well, here was the obit from ESPN's Bob Lee, who's still around 30 years ago.
Fame, indeed. It seems still too surreal to believe, but Pete Maravich is dead at the age of 40. Pistol Pete died Tuesday morning of a heart attack in Pasadena, California, stricken while playing a pickup basketball game in a local church. Moments after this home video was shot, Maravich collapsed on the court. It's apparent that he's going through this game just about half speed. Just before collapsing, Maravich turned to a companion and said, I feel really good. Efforts to revive him failed. He was pronounced dead just after 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. His death is a stunner, a shock to the system that leaves anyone who follows sport reaching for his private memories of a unique athlete. Just say the name Maravich, or the nickname Pistol Pete, and the mind's eye recalls the flying hair, the floppy socks, the incredible moves. He was box office, and he was a metaphor for what the sport of basketball can be.
I threw a behind-the-back bounce pass during a junior varsity game between a defender's legs. I looked around and I saw the fans and how excited they really got, and that was back in 1959. And I just saw the excitement of entertainment that you could bring to people, and that they would really enjoy that. And so I wanted that. It was like a drug inducement to me, and that's the way I'd learned the game anyway.
Pete Maravich was the greatest scorer in the history of college basketball, possessed of skills that now seem decades ahead of their time.
The game itself today is that type of game. It's a game of spectacular moves and spectacular plays.
He was coached by his father, Press Maravich, at LSU. From the early years, Press instilled in his son the need to be different, innovative on the court.
He was a great thinker. In other words, I used to talk to him about conceptualizing in basketball. He used to ask me, what do you mean by that? I said, you have to think one, two, maybe three patterns ahead of time what's going to happen.
That was Press Maravich talking about his fabled son, and Press died just a few months before Pistol Pete did. Dan Bornay was a young reporter covering Pete Maravich in the year of 1970 when he became the leading scorer in major college basketball history, surpassing Oscar Robertson. And Dan, all these years later, there's been nobody quite like Pete Maravich.
No, you're right. He was one in a billion. It's doubtful anyone will ever beat the individual scoring records that Pete holds for NCAA big college basketball, because no player that good would hang around 3 years to play varsity ball. Pete, of course, set the record and went on to a brilliant career in the National Basketball Association, and then transformed his life and became a very devout Christian. And one of the reasons he was there in California playing with Dr. James Dobson. Dobson, the founder of Focus on the Family, and Pete was very committed to that ministry. So it was a tragic loss, but you know, he died where he lived to be, on a basketball court. And you hate to call it a fitting ending to someone that young, but it certainly brought his life full circle. I would imagine the very first things that Pete would ever remember would be shooting at a basketball goal. And so it's a lasting memory, and it's one that certainly peculiar to LSU, peculiar in a positive way because of the impact that he had on LSU basketball. And the Maravich Center, named after Pete Maravich, of course. I don't think he ever played a collegiate game in that center, but he played, I think, one exhibition professional game. But there's a statue up there of Pete. And a statue of Shaq and a statue of Bob Pettit, three icons of LSU basketball, and the three LSU basketball players who are in the NBA team of the half century. So, yeah, quite a lasting legacy and interesting life.
What was the atmosphere like at the old Cal Palace, the Parker Agriculture Center, when Pete was doing his Showtime?
Well, the Ag Center was, it's a rodeo barn, and they put a wooden floor, and time to time they let people play basketball on it. And it was packed when Pete played, of course, and most of the time people honestly didn't care too much about who won the game. The question was, how many did Pete get? He got a lot. He averaged over 44 points a game. You can imagine that. When a kid cracks 30 now in college basketball, you say, wow, pretty good game, but and to average 44 points a game over a career is truly remarkable. And so it was a great run for 3 years. His first year, freshman ball, couldn't play varsity ball back then. Surprised many people now who say, wow, even freshmen couldn't play. Well, that's right, they couldn't. And so the PMAC, not the PMAC, but the Ag Center would be packed with people for Pete's freshman game, and then everybody would leave and the varsity played because they weren't really into it yet. With that Maravich magic. You know, Jim, had a conversation with a person about a month ago. I was on a business trip in Miami, and she told me that, I don't want to give too much away here, but her husband is a screenwriter. And he was one of the screenwriters who helped put together the movie Tin Cup. You can remember it.
Kevin Costner, yeah.
Yeah, Costner. Yeah, there's a movie being planned to on Pete's life, but it would focus on Pete's relationship with Press. That very, very special relationship of father to son, coach to player, and all of the other issues that surrounded that family's life when it was here in Baton Rouge over the years that we don't need to get into right now, but. It would be an interesting movie if it is shot. There's been a fair amount of work done on it in advance. I'm not sure the extent of all of that, and I don't want to say something that I shouldn't say here. But I think that will be a very, very interesting look decades back into a relationship of a man and a boy, and just what the dynamic of that was when Press realized that Pete was good and could be great, and then when Pete bought into that and decided to commit his life to a basketball a hoop and a net.
Well, Pete set all those records without a three-point play and without a shot clock. So if that had not been an impediment, he probably would have averaged over 50 points a game, maybe mid-50s, but there has been no one like him in the 48 years since he departed Louisiana State University, and I doubt that we'll ever see the likes of Pistol Pete again. Dan Bornay, the voice of the PMAC. He's there every game, and the other night there was some magic. LSU lost, but it was an exciting game against Kentucky. Thank you, Dan Bornay.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. And we'll be back Monday, same time, same place. Until then, for Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.